I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. You want to talk about what happened with President Barack Obama and his trip to Latin America and to the West Indies? We'll talk about that this coming hour. But first, it's wet outside. Let's see what's happening on the roads. And support for WEAA traffic is provided by GM Corporate. GM is offering the Total Confidence Plan. Details and limitations at gmconfidence.com.
And expect delays around the area because of the wet conditions with this update brought to you by Hewlett-Packard. Interloop Wilkins Avenue to Security Boulevard. Your slowest spot is around 70 with delays in place to Charles Street to Paring Parkway. 95 northbound between the 895 merge and the Beltway speeds down there. A couple of crashes in Baltimore County to mention. Reisterstown Road at Walker Avenue in Pikesville. Also Middle River at Pulaski Highway. In Baltimore City, watch for wrecks eastern at Macon, Edmondson at Wildwood Parkway, and in Severn, Telegraph Road at 1st Street. JFX northbound between the 41st Street Bridge and Northern Parkway. Heavy traffic there, just some minor slowing. And debris removal blocking southbound 543 in Harford County at Taylor Road. An HP Office Jet Pro all-in-one printer helps small businesses with big savings on color printing. Get up to 50% less cost per page than laser. For details, visit hp.com/go/color for less. I'm Joanna Campbell with Baltimore Area Traffic.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. Before we get into the heart of the show, let me just remind you all, we are in the beginning of the WEA, at least for me, the WEA Fun Drive on this rainy, rainy Monday, which is always the best day in the world to call in at 410-319-8888. Show your support for your public radio station, and do mean that. It's time to make that call, and of course, everyone who makes that pledge and makes that phone call will be eligible for a drawing that will be taking place where you could end up on a 7-day super cruise for two on the Royal Caribbean Grandeur of the Seas. Not half bad. If you win, take me. No, I'm just kidding. But we're going to talk about another grand cruise that just took place, and that's the grand cruise of President Barack Obama to Mexico and to Latin and to the West Indies for the Conference of the Americas. We are joined by phone today, by William Kern, who is editor and founder of WorldMeet.us, which is an incredible website that translates publications from around the globe, and he's been covering that journey of President Obama on the website. William, good to have you back. He's not there? All right. We'll get him back on the air here in just a second. And then Christina Leahy is in the studio. Dr. Leahy is professor of comparative politics and chair of the Department of Political Studies and International Studies at McDaniel College, member of the board of directors of Amnesty International, traveled to Cuba in 1994 with students from McDaniel College. Ron Pinio is coordinator of Latin American Studies at Towson University, author of two books and several articles on the history of Latin America, lived in Mexico for several years, and all of them join us. Good to have you all with us.
It's a pleasure.
Is William there? No? Okay, so he'll join us in a minute. All right, so we'll start. And William will be able to come in. So this is interesting. When we looked at this Friday and President Barack Obama was going to the West Indies, and we'll talk about Mexico in a minute, of course, the top of the news everywhere was this overture to Fidel, not to Fidel, but to Cuba, and Cuba's response, which I found even more interesting. That Raul Castro said, "We're open. We're here, and we will talk about anything. No preconditions. Anything on the table, and the door is open." Were you shocked by that, Christina?
I was fairly shocked by that. But he also made a statement that is virtually unheard of for a politician of any kind. He said, "Not only are we open to talk about everything, including human rights, political prisoners, but we may have been wrong." And he said, "We're human. Maybe we're wrong."
What do you think he meant? He may have been wrong. What does it mean for Raul Castro to say we may have been wrong?
That's a very big deal.
Well, there are now
Ron Pinero.
Pinero.
I'm making you Spanish, whether you want to or not. Go ahead.
There are different estimates about the number of political prisoners in Cuba. Perhaps he was referring to some of those numbers. Some argue that there are as many as 200 political prisoners in Cuba. Amnesty International puts the number around 85 to 67. So maybe he was pointing to things like that.
It seems that something really is, there's a shift going on. And let's try to put the pieces of the shift together here. I mean, the shift First of all, we had President George Bush for 8 years. He was on a collision course with Cuba. He was on a collision course in some ways with Brazil even. He was on a collision course with Silvio in Brazil. He was on a collision course clearly with Chavez of Venezuela, and on a collision course with Evo Morales in Bolivia, the first Indian, American Indian, native Bolivian to be elected president of that country. Changed the whole course of that country, turned it upside down. He's in the middle of his own pitch battle between the mostly white landowners in five states and the Indians in the rest of the country. I mean, there's a lot changing in Latin America. The left wing taking over, right and left, left wing of different varieties, a broad spectrum of countries. So, and then here you have President Barack Obama coming in, greeted by all these men and women who run these nations as a brother. This is a really interesting phenomenon. What do you make of this, and what's the root of this, do you think?
Well, across Latin America, you've seen what some have called a shift to the left, a move to the left, with those leaders that you mentioned, including Rafael Correa of Ecuador. And some near misses in other countries as well. Ollanta Humala nearly won in Peru, who might well be considered leftist. And AMLO, Andres Manuel López Obrador in Mexico, lost by 200,000 votes.
And, of course, some people argue Mexico, he didn't lose at all.
Right.
Well, certainly. When I was there a couple of years ago, there was a continuing protest. And
right.
AMLO was one of those who actually continued and continues to protest that election. So you may look at Barack Obama as being part of a shift to the left in the Americas as a whole and a rethinking of the whole process of neoliberalism and these deregulation policies that have been adopted in the United States and across Latin America.
They have sunk most of the world's economies, but...
Absolutely.
Christina, what's your take on what is happening? What's the dynamic is all about?
Well, I think a very provocative thing that President Obama said in the press conference he had Sunday night after the Summit of the Americas, which speaks directly to what you just mentioned. And he literally said that we need to look at the problems surrounding economic growth and opportunity or lack thereof in Latin America that may have resulted, as he put it, because of a too rigid application of a free market doctrine imposed by the IMF, the Washington Consensus. And the thing that really struck him, and I think he is a agile enough human being, thinker and politician, that he can actually be a politician and intellectualize at the same time. Because what struck him very profoundly, and I've read this in a number of accounts, is how much solidarity there was with Cuba, and not in just an artificial sense.
You're talking about other Latin American countries.
Yes, at the Summit of the Americas. And he literally said what struck him was the number of doctors that Cuba has sent to other countries. And I think he made this intellectual leap about Cuba's soft power. And he said this other very provocative thing. He says, if we recognize that our only interaction with Latin American countries is through drug interdiction or the military, we're missing out on a way to increase our influence in the daily lives of the people. And I think he really recognized that Cuba sending doctors all throughout Latin America and the world, for that matter, had a profound effect of solidarity because people were touched quite literally by it.
So, William Kern, I think you're with us now.
Yes.
Welcome. Good to have you with us. William Kern, of course, is the editor and publisher, founder of worldmeets.us. You can check it on the website right now. If you open that website, there's a gigantic picture there of President Barack Obama taking a book from Hugo Chavez that Christina Leahy brought with her. Not the book that he gave him, but the same copy is in her purse. of this book by Galeano, and it's a whole series of articles. What World Meets Us does is it translates articles from around the world. So a whole series of articles are translated here about Obama on a number of levels, but William, it's always good to have you with us.
It's good to be with you, Mark, and I just want to point out to your listeners that if you look in the right column on worldmeets.us, starting down lower near the bottom, you could follow before the summit and then through the summit, and then after the summit. And we're still working on the reaction to the summit from this weekend. There's a lot of content still to come. And I've been calling President Obama the diffuser-in-chief.
the way
that he's able to enter a room of people who are hostile toward him or toward the United States and completely diffuse the situation. There are a couple of key moments this weekend that really bowled me over, including the initial handshake with Hugo Chavez, which
yes.
I want to point out to you is not a normal handshake.
What do you mean he's not a normal handshake?
Well, you know how people kind of, you know, Maybe when you were younger, I used to do this with my friends. You know, you put your thumb through the thumb of the other person and go, hey, man, you know, like that. It wasn't. It's a very famous picture now. We don't have it up on the site at the moment, but there was a picture when Hugo Chavez and President Obama met, and they didn't shake normally. It was like, you know, that kind of a handshake.
Just to be clear, it was not a terrorist fist bump, was it?
But there are a couple of other things there. You had a couple of events. Evo Morales accused the United States of plotting to take his life. President Obama completely defused that masterfully. And then there was a second encounter with Hugo Chavez when he gave President Obama the book, which was on Saturday. And I thought that was a very striking moment because it kind of encapsulates the desire of people in Latin America to communicate with the President of the United States and Americans about the actual history of the U.S. and Latin America. Most Americans have no idea the long and often painful history of Latin America with the States.
I mean, that's right. I mean, I think that one of the interesting things about this conference is that you have President Barack Obama who actually understands world history and understands these interactions that took place.
Well, perhaps, but remember, this is his first trip to Latin America, and I understand that he's empirically based, that he's a clear thinker, that he wants to drive his opinions based on evidence, and he seems to be willing to compromise. But I don't think that he really has a deep understanding of Latin America, having just come there for the first time, and frankly, while it's very encouraging that he's there talking with people and shaking hands with folks that heretofore we hadn't been friendly to, the agenda that he is talking about is still not the one that leading Latin America would like to get into.
So explain that further.
Well, for example, I think Mexico is very concerned about the transportation of American-made weapons into Mexico. More than 90% of the weapons that are used from the violence in Mexico, the drug-related murders have gone up to 6,000 last year and are growing again this year. That's an issue that they want to talk about. Obama, in fairness, spoke about that a bit, but it's as the United States focuses on the question of the war on drugs, and there's no indication that there's going to be movement away from that type of policy. That's an issue. And also the Latin American leaders are very concerned about U.S. farm subsidies. There are over $22 billion a year, $10 billion a year for corn. That's an issue that Latin American leaders would like to talk about. So their agenda is poverty eradication, opening of U.S. markets. But this G20 proposal to give more money to the International Monetary Fund is highly problematical to many Latin American leaders, those on the left that we've been speaking of. I think that they're very still concerned about the issues that are left outstanding, and to my mind at least, Barack Obama hasn't shown that same willingness to attack issues based on the evidence that he has on domestic policy in some other areas of the world.
Christina?
Well, we have to look at the fact that he's not done with his even first 100 days. So it is kind of that measure of expectations that people have. But I do think he's also a very carefully crafted centrist politician. So he's trying everything in very measured steps. Everything that the Obama campaign did, everything that this administration does is well thought out. So, for example, the Congressional Black Caucus was a trial balloon going to Cuba before he went to the Summit of the Americas. And that's when Fidel Castro literally said, we want to know how we can help President Obama. So there's this different current that people want to like the United States again. People want to feel good about our foreign policy. But you can't change overnight the policies that remain. And that includes things like the issues of economics that really, really do divide the global north from the south.
Well, I think that, you know, when we come back from this break, we're going to take it in about a minute or less. I think we can maybe focus a little bit on the fact that in a lot of ways this is emblematic of a lot of critique of President Obama's administration, which is that the language of change and the rhetoric have been amazing and have inspired people, which is one of the reasons I think he was greeted in the way he was greeted in Trinidad Tobago when he went for the conference. On the other hand, it's what is actually going to happen? What are the policies are really going to change? That's the place we don't know yet. And we'll talk about that when we come back from this break with our three guests. William Kern on by phone, editor and founder of World Meet Us, Dr. Christina Leahy from McDaniel College, Dr. Ron Pinio from Towson University, 410-319-8888. Join us here, but join the pledge line on that same line. We'll be right back, so don't go away. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are talking this hour about President Barack Obama, his meeting in the West Indies with all the leaders of the Western Hemisphere, except for Raul Castro and Cuba. We're talking about that. We'll talk about that more. Joining us in studio are Dr. Christina Leahy, who's professor of comparative politics and chair of the Department of Political Studies and International Studies at McDaniel College. She's a member of the board of directors of Amnesty International. She traveled to Cuba in 1994 with students from McDaniel College. Ron Pinio is coordinator in Latin American Studies at Towson University, author of two books and several articles on the history of Latin America. He lived in Mexico for several years, and Dr. Pinio teaches at Towson University. William Kern is editor and founder of worldmeet.us, which you can go online right now and see the articles that translated from around the globe about President Barack Obama's trip to the West Indies and to Mexico. So, and the number here, by the way, is 410-319-8888. You can pledge and talk at the same time. So where we left off was the rhetoric versus the reality of the politics and policies of President Barack Obama when it comes to Latin America. It was all very cordial. Part of it, I think, had to do with the fact that that Latin America, for the most part, are nations of people of color. And for the first time, we have an African-American president, the United States of America, and watching him among the other leaders of Latin America, which is, there was a synergy there, and you felt it, they felt it, and I think that was part of what was happening there. That was just part of what was happening. But the other is people do think, I think, from what you were even adding on to what you were saying, Ron, that it was, what you were saying was true, but I think people have a hope things might change. And that's, that's the opening here, I think.
Right, but I think it continues to be a concern that President Obama's weakest area, it seems to me, is Latin America. On the domestic front, on other areas, he seems deeply knowledgeable, well-versed in the debates. Of course, he conducted himself extraordinarily well, a great depth of knowledge. But when it came to Latin America, as a Latin Americanist, I often winced at his lack of reflection on the ongoing policies of the United States with respect to the continuation of the war on drugs and these other issues.
So, Christiana, I mean, you seem to have a fairly positive view of the trip, but you have a critique as well?
Well, yes, I share Ron's concern about, I would call it a general naivete about the history of the United States and Latin America and why we might be received the way that we have been. In fact, his advisor for this trip, a former ambassador to both Mexico and, I might add, Chile during the overthrow of Salvador Allende, would make people take a little pause with respect to how broad a view he might be getting of Latin America and certainly of Latin American-U.S. relations. So I share a little bit of that concern about his naivete and maybe his belief that just by doing the style rather than the substance, that's significant enough to move things ahead, for example, with regard to Cuba. But we can't underestimate the desire for him to be all that he's expected to be. Daniel Ortega, in 50 minutes, gave him a very solid lesson in U.S. Latin American relations, but at the end said, I want to believe in him. And the same thing with some of the other harsh critics. They all came away, including Hugo Chavez. He went from being an ignoramus a month ago to, I want to be your friend. That's
calling Barack Obama an ignoramus
exactly.
A month ago, right.
So that is very significant. But again, it's significant in terms of tone, diplomacy, setting the groundwork. The policies are going to be another more difficult thing.
So William Kern, I mean, what did the, pardon me, what did the foreign press say about this issue of style versus substance with Barack Obama in Latin America?
Well, I don't know that I've read anything that had that specific point in it. But I think that I agree with what Christiana said earlier, which is that it's very early He just got into office. He's got an incredible number of issues on his plate. And right now, the mood music, if I could put it that way, is very, very important to people. And yes, Daniel Ortega, and there are a number of people down south that are waiting to see what he's actually going to do. But in terms of this particular summit, it's very, very clear from every article we've translated so far that he's had a tremendous impact altering the perceptions of the United States just by simply saying, we have made mistakes. We are a great nation, but we are a nation of, you know, we are all equal. We're working together. And he was willing to listen. He was willing to listen to all of the heads of state criticize the United States over the Cuba issue. And so I think that, yes, it's early days, and people are waiting to see what's actually going to happen. But on the other hand, people in Latin America are aware also that there are a lot of issues pressing on President Obama, and they hope that he will not forget them. They hope that he will stick to it and do some of the tangible things that we've been talking about. And so I think it's open right now. I think he has an opening. He has an opening to make tremendous progress depending upon what happens after this.
I mean, a lot of the policies we're talking about here, whether we're looking at not just Latin American countries, but Caribbean nations.
Right.
Mm-hmm. A lot of their economic troubles at the moment come from, A, the enforcement of the International Monetary Fund and World Bank policies that force them to push free markets and undercut their social spending, that and force them to go into become debtor nations. And that's the reaction, I think, in Latin America. The reaction has been to elect a spectrum of people on the left to be presidents of those countries. And that's something the U.S. is going to have to confront and deal with. The fact would be we get 20% of our oil from Venezuela. Is that the right number?
That's right.
And Mexico. Venezuela and Mexico are key suppliers.
I think that the labels left, right, and center right now are just completely been thrown to the wind because the United States is taking control of one of our largest banks and a number of other huge institutions in the banking system and other sectors of the economy, the General Motors and so forth. And the fact that neoliberalism, this mantra that we were promoting in Latin America for decades, that many of these left-wing Latin American leaders have been railing against for decades, really collapsed. So that whole consensus, the Washington consensus, as I think Ron pointed out earlier, this is a completely new day on these economic issues. There's a chance to revisit these issues, and there's not this this dogmatic assertion of neoliberalism, and that really does create an opening.
But it's fair to point out that some countries of Latin America continue to embrace these neoliberal economic policies.
Sure, like Chile as well.
Well, Chile and Uribe in Colombia and Calderon in Mexico. So I think they continue to be very powerful, very persuasive. And Chile under Bachelet, in some ways, even Lula, who's seen as
in Brazil.
In Brazil, someone who's elected on the left by the Workers' Party has come over to the notion of embracing free market economic policies.
But I think one of the things Americans don't know about, we don't pay enough attention to Latin America, I think, even though we have a rising Latin American population in America, 85% of whom, by one poll that it was one of the Latin American presses, said support Barack Obama in the United States.
Yeah, that was an amazing poll.
That was an interesting poll.
From Colombia.
But yeah, from Colombia, that's right. I found that on World Meets Us, by the way, on the website there. Is that there is a populist and left-wing people's movement throughout Latin America in opposition to a lot of the policies of America. And in places like Bolivia, which when we come back from this break, we'll talk about, where Evo Morales is president. He's the first native person to become president. The country is split close to a civil war. Hugo Chavez in Venezuela and the others. I mean, we'll come back from this break. We should talk about that because those are the places that will make or break American policy in South America, I think. And because they're, like Evo Morales says, accuse the United States of fomenting dissent inside of his country, which is why he sent the American ambassador back. So we'll talk about that and more when we come back. So stay with us as we continue our conversation about President Barack Obama and his Latin American visit. And right now we want to have you visit WEAA. We'll be right back to tell you how to do that. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are in the studio with Dr. Ron Pineo. I can do it to you again. I'm sorry, Ron. Ron Pineo, who is coordinator of Latin American Studies at Towson University, author of two books and several articles on the history of Latin America, lived in Mexico for several years. Dr. Christiana Leahy is professor of comparative politics and chair of the Department of Political Studies and International Studies at McDaniel College. She traveled to Cuba in 1994 with students from McDaniel College. William Curran is editor and founder of World Meet.us, an incredible website that translates articles from around the globe. And we're talking now about President Barack Obama's trip to the West Indies for the conference with all the leaders of Latin America and the Western Hemisphere and the Caribbean and Canada, and his trip to Mexico. And one of the things that was interesting here was that Hugo Chavez, much maligned, called the devil by President Bush, at odds with the United States for a long time.
No, he called President Bush the devil.
He called President Bush the devil. That's right. Excuse me. Sorry. Maybe President Bush just thought it and I was channeling. He gave him a book by Eduardo Galeano. And the book is called Open Veins of Latin America. And I read that book maybe 30 years ago. I want to go back and get it again. It's stuck in my library. I haven't pulled it off the shelf in a long time. But it's made me want to read it. And Christiana, you brought that book with you here. Talk about what that message was that Hugo Chavez was trying to send to Barack Obama.
Well, I think it was a very important message, and it was interesting that it was Chavez delivering the book because, as I said, I don't think that Chavez is necessarily a great intellect himself. However, he certainly has advisors. And if there is a book that encapsulates the imperialism from which Latin America has suffered for five centuries, the subtitle of the book is Five Centuries of Spoilage of a Continent, basically. And the Open Veins of Latin America refers to all of the resources that imperial powers have taken from Latin America. And often we only assume that Spain and Portugal were the imperial powers. However, the United States quickly assumed that role in the Americas. So it's a way of saying you need perhaps what Ron was referring to. You need a little more education on Latin America. This is your first trip to Latin America. Well, here's some good background reading. And while it was published in 1973, it's a historical piece dictating what happened at that period. He could add several more fascinating pieces that would update President Obama, but it was a way of saying, here's basic reading by an Uruguayan and a public intellectual in Latin American terms.
Because when he published that book, we had not yet overthrown Allende in Chile.
Exactly.
Well, the best that could be said for it, I guess, is that it's a classic, although it's a revolutionary call for the left to rise up. So it's a somewhat
dated. Galeano is a revolutionary, and his books are published by the Monthly Review Press, mm-hmm. which is a Marxist publishing company here in the United States of America. Yeah. And I remember it as being a really kind of eye-opening book in terms of the history of Latin America and our interventions in it.
Most scholars, I think, nowadays would look at the book as a relic of the past and not something.
What do you mean by a relic of the past?
Well, it's offering a rather rigid view of the world, the dependist understanding of relations between the United States and Latin America and the developed world in Latin America that really saw one cause for all the problems for Latin America, this external relationship in the world market. Thinking has grown rather more complex, and in the end of the day, I think most scholars now would conclude, and I certainly would, that Latin America, while it has to struggle with some dependent relations, in the end of the day, they make their own history. And dependency theory and Galeano weren't always all that subtle. It wasn't intended to be a subtle work. It was intended to be a call to action by revolutionaries and served that purpose well. So it's a curious choice. I don't know that all academics would agree that it's the best choice. But on the shelf, I think it has a place. And if Obama's education is going to begin, it's not a bad place.
Can I say something about that, Mark?
Sure, please do, William Curran.
So I think that Americans underestimate the impact of history on a lot of the other countries that we have to deal with. And I would include China in this. China is walking around still today with a chip on its shoulder over what happened in the 1800s. They've still not gotten over the fact that they were the dominant civilization for hundreds of years. And then the West rose, and they feel slighted by this. The Russians feel very slighted. The Latin Americans feel very, very wounded by U.S. History with that continent. Now, if you want just a slice of this, I would suggest to people to look at the feature story today on worldmeets.us, and you'll see a Mexican perspective on U.S.-Mexican history. This is somebody who wrote this op-ed wanting to educate President Obama.
Right.
U.S.-Mexican history. And it is so interesting to read. There's so much in there that I never learned when I went to school about the filibusters, about the Spanish-American War, about
the invasion of Mexico in 1916 under President Wilson.
That's right. There's been three invasions of Mexico in the Mexican mindset. They lost half of their territory to the United States in the 1840s. And these wounds they're still there. And you know, it helps a lot to have, it, at least in this particular case, it helped a lot to have a president listen and not be sort of reactionary when he heard these things. And all, you know, he said, yeah, you know, we have to move on. We're not perfect. We've made mistakes. But we have this basket of issues we have to deal with and address together as equals. And these things go a long way. Faith. F-A-C-E, faith. It goes a long way overseas, much, much longer than Americans tend to think.
It seems, and in this, okay, I'm going to say something wrong, I'm sorry.
No, I think that there are fresher wounds for Mexico, and there's actually a couple of very politically doable, smart moves that Obama could take. For Mexico, one fresh wound is the fence, the 700-mile fence that we're in the process of constructing along the border at the price of $49 billion in a time of cutting back the budget. That might be a smart way of looking again at something that maybe we can't afford. The border is actually 1,951 miles. I was not a math major, but I would say that there's a problem here. And some people have said if they build a 15-foot high fence, a lot of folks are going to have 16-foot ladders. The symbolism of that fence is really problematical. And I would hope that Obama would look at that issue again and begin a dialogue on that issue. For Mexicans, that's a very important issue. Another problem is the State Department advisory against Mexico. Mexico gets 4 million tourists a year, and they depend heavily on those dollars coming in. Just to finish the thought, half of the tourist now trade has dropped off in this year alone.
In Mexico.
If they continue not going, it could be a real disaster for Mexico. Tourism is way down, and they depend on those dollars. The Mexican economy is slated for negative economic growth this year, and the fewer tourists is just going to be really, really harmful. That's another win for Obama. Mm-hmm. If he would lift that State Department advisory, which is something that would be quite doable, I think it's a real mistake, and I think that it would be something that Mexicans would look at and say, that's a smart move. That's something that, not going back to the 1840s, but going just back a few
can
months
I just
would be
chime
good.
In on this for a second, Mark?
Sorry, no, I just want to get to Christiana as well before we're on.
I was going to agree with Ron and say, in addition to that, the assault weapons ban. I mean, the Mexicans really would be helped greatly.
Absolutely.
And needless to say, given the violence that we've experienced just in the past couple of weeks in this country, to say that it's undoable to try to pass an assault weapons ban, I think, is to show a bit of weakness in terms of President Obama.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, William?
Yeah, I was just going to say, in terms of the drug issue and drug fighting issue, if you read through the commentary from Mexico that we posted quite a bit of commentary from the Mexicans over the last few days because Obama stopped there before he went to Trinidad and Tobago. So we started doing that before the summit began, and a lot of that stuff is out now. You'll notice that Mexican society is riven partly because the 2006 election, when Calderon was elected, it was a lot like 2000 in the U.S. Half of Mexican society has very little confidence in the government right now. There's a lot of suspicion about whether this government is giving up too much authority to the United States, even to the point of giving up, allowing the U.S. to expropriate. I forgot if it was U.S.-Mexico Ties, A New Beginning, that article or the feature, one of those two articles. There's a long section in there about there's a lot of suspicion on the part of some people in Mexico that the Mexican government is...
Right. It was in the article that you had on your website from La Jornada, that Mexican newspaper.
Right.
U.S.-Mexico Ties is a new beginning with a question mark. That was the article that was... featured.
Right. And so, you know, Mexican society is driven by that, the divide, and a lot of suspicion of their own government and suspicion of the U.S. government. And there's a lot of concern that Obama, you know, they like Obama, but does he really have a handle on these foreign policy issues? You were talking about earlier with the CIA and the coup d'etats and so on and so forth. People think, okay, Obama's a good guy. You know, maybe Chavez now has a good feeling about him, and maybe Evo Morales has a good feeling about him. If you read the translations of Castro's reflections, there are two articles up there that are translations of his reflections that we did the other day. You'll see that they just think that Obama he doesn't know what he's getting into, or he's a little naive, or he's a new guy. He's like Kennedy. Castro compares him to Kennedy, and he's a president who he's brilliant, he's got good motives, he's, you know, so on and so forth. But there's a lot about the U.S. government even he doesn't understand. And the question is, can he get a handle on it? Does he know what the CIA is doing?
Well, for Castro's sake, I hope he isn't like Kennedy.
Well, I'm just saying, this is what Castro is. I'm trying to reveal what some of the other people are saying out there in Latin America. But in any case, I'll just stop on that.
La Jornada, the paper that you're referring to, is a paper on the left in Latin America. I mean, they call him President Obama under the cartoon in Spanish. It says President Obama of Gringoland. So, I mean, you know, it's
that's right. Well, point out that amazing cartoon by Magoo.
Well, let me just interrupt because we're going to take a very short break. We'll be right back with our guests. We're going to pick up with Evo Morales. We're going to pick up with gun bans from Mexico. We're going to talk about the Caribbean and President Barack Obama. You can join us here, 410-319-8888. That's also the pledge line. Stay with us. Hi, Mark Steiner. Welcome back. We're talking about President Barack Obama and our hemisphere here and his reception in Mexico and in Trinidad and Tobago with the conference with all the leaders of every country in the Western Hemisphere, except for Raul Castro and the Cubans. That may change in the coming future. It looks like things are opening up dramatically there. William Kern joins us by phone. He's editor and founder of worldmeet.us. Check that out as we're talking. Dr. Christiana Leahy is professor of comparative politics and chair of the Department of Political Studies and International Studies at McDaniel College, member of the board of directors of Amnesty International, traveled to Cuba in 1994 with students from McDaniel College. Dr. Ron Pinio is coordinator of Latin American Studies at Towson University, author of two books and several articles on the history of Latin America, and lived in Mexico for several years. The number here is 410-319-8888 to join in this conversation. We have a call. Can we go to the call? In a minute, we'll go to the callers who are calling in. One of the places we left off was the kind of real troubling stuff in Latin America that I think that's interesting, even in the articles I read on worldmeet.us about Bolivia, is that Evo Morales was cordial and friendly, but he was, of all the people that we don't talk about him very much, because I haven't seen a lot in the press, but he, at that conference, was saying... You still don't have it right.
Well, the thing is that on the way to the conference, there was an attempt on his life.
Right. I know. I was about to say that. Yeah.
Right, right. And so he, when he got there, obviously, he was probably a little bit emotional. And he held a press conference challenging President Obama to renounce the attempt on his life, which President Obama did. I mean, he announced any attempts on the lives of democratically elected leaders. And we have a long article on from the Bolivians on this.
Yes.
Probably later on tonight it'll be done.
It'll be on your website tonight?
That's right.
Good.
That's right. By the way, it's worldmeets.us.
What have I been saying?
Worldmeets.us.
Sorry.
Yes. So I guess in answer to your question, I mean, he was probably a little emotional at that press conference he gave, and then Obama, again, he diffused the situation, and they met and obviously got along very well afterwards.
So what do we think about the situation with Evo Morales and Bolivia and how that's going to play out in all this with America and with President Barack Obama?
Well, he's facing some big, big problems in his own country. The lowland area, which, as you point out, is more mestizo and white. The Media Luna region is more affluent. That's where the natural gas is in Bolivia. And that area is very opposed to the type of reforms that Evo Morales has been pushing with a new constitution approved by 62% of the voters back in January. So they've been talking about separatist movements in the lowlands. In the Pando province, which is in the extreme northeast, there were some very bloody acts of violence against the Morales supporters who went into that area, and the governor there, the prefect of the region, was involved in, great bloodshed in the area. I think anywhere from 15 to over 100 people were killed. So he's dealing with a very violent and explosive situation. He's got big problems at home. And right now, his view is that the United States is one of his problems, too. He kicked out the ambassador. The DEA, the USAID. So relations with Bolivia, I think, in some ways, are the most problematical of all for the United States. And I think it's going to take more than just goodwill. I think it's going to some hard road to hoe ahead, I think.
Christiana, I thought then we're going to raise the phone to and open them up.
I would agree with that entirely, but also note that in this odd example, Hugo Chavez may prove to be useful to Obama because the ambassador that was called back by President Chavez has now been returned. We have a new ambassador that's going to be serving in the capacity of U.S. ambassador or Venezuelan ambassador to the United States. So that tells us that Chavez could play a role in dealing with the violence in Bolivia and maybe serving as...
Interesting enough, also the State Department spokesperson didn't make it quite clear, but almost said that we were going to reciprocate.
Yes.
He said that we'll be sending an ambassador back to Venezuela.
And that's a big deal right there.
So, I mean, that's why, even though, as you were saying earlier on, that President Barack Obama has to really kind of find some substance here the proof will be in the pudding over the next several years with Latin America, there are steps being made now that I think many people had not expected for years to be made.
It would have been unthinkable.
Exactly.
So let me open the phones so that you come back with that. 410-319-8888. Jerome in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Give me 60 for the two.
Jerome?
Hello?
You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. You know, Mark, they always talk about the policies that aren't instituted for the immigration policy in this country. Nobody's ever read over the air the immigration policy of Mexico. You can't be born in Mexico and be a Mexican citizen like they do here. Mm-hmm. And another thing, they're not going to stop the immigration. Mexico doesn't want to stop because the money sent back by 20 million illegal aliens fuel the economy of Mexico. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to shut it down. They're not going to shut that down.
Well, I go ahead, Ron.
Well, I think the real issue on Mexico is that they rightly point to some of the problems of unauthorized immigrants coming from Mexico into the United States. Over 400 people are lost a year crossing the border without documentation in the United States. No matter what side we are, anyone is on this debate, that's simply unacceptable. But Mexico has problems, too. Some 600,000 Central Americans come up across their southern border from Guatemala, and they are cruelly abused as they come up from these other countries by the Mexican nationals. And that's a situation that Mexico, I think, needs to look at a little bit closer to home. I understand, I accept a large swath of their critique of U.S. policy on immigration, but many Mexicans, when I travel in Mexico, point out that they're ashamed about the train of death, for example, that runs through the southern part of Mexico and the mistreatment of the Central Americans, Guatemalans and others. There's a complex issue, and I think that if we could work on one issue, it would be those border deaths. That's something that no matter what we do, we need to address that effectively.
And we've had shows here before about the effect of U.S. agricultural policy on the destruction of the Mexican agricultural economy, mm-hmm. Yeah. Forcing farmers off their land into the cities and to be undocumented workers in the United States of America and beyond.
Since NAFTA, right. 1.3 million Mexicans have been forced off their land. And where do they go? Well, many of them drift up to the United States looking for work.
Let me try to get on the caller in here before we go to break. And Gary in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Mark.
Thanks for calling.
I wanted to, first of all, say, in response to what that gentleman said about illegal aliens, I used the words of Howard Zinn. You know, those folks that come here are not illegal aliens to me. Folks like George Bush, Dick Cheney, and Donald Rumsfeld, those folks are alien to me. And I would like to invoke Randall Robinson here, particularly quitting America, when he spoke about the things that happened and continue to happen with Haiti. You just invoked USAID, and, you know, there's just so much that has gone wrong over the centuries. Hugo Chavez they attempted a coup on him with the help of those folks at Fox News, et cetera. And those of us that have been listening to Democracy Now! for years are well aware of the attempts to destabilize democratically elected governments. And the thing is, as this world moves forward, we must try to have some equality taking place. As you know very well, over half the world's population is living on $2 a day or less. And the equality must, or the equalization of the process must take place in order for there to be peace in the world. And I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you.
Very quick thought. Christian, how much you want to start?
Well, interestingly enough, the Summit of the Americas is a forum to deal with exactly the issues that we've raised. And unfortunately, the leaders weren't dealing with the substantive issues. They were trafficking more in style rather than substance. And the issues turned more to security, enhanced security, $30 million pledged for enhanced security. So the U.S. is still coming at the problem from a national security perspective, as opposed to what the caller is echoing, which is a basic needs human security perspective, which I think all of Latin America would benefit from.
Right, and the U.S. continues to support the Merida plan for Mexico, which is looks like something like $1.4 billion to beef up Mexican law enforcement in their war on illegal drugs in Mexico. So the things the caller's talking about aren't the things that the U.S. right now seems bent on going forward with.
Right, and the drug policy really, the violence in Mexico has a lot to do with the drug policy in the United States of America. I mean, that's...
Well, Hillary Clinton acknowledged that even, and that, again, was a significant acknowledgement that if it weren't for the extreme demand in the United States, we wouldn't have the issue quite as terribly as we do.
But the conversation has really moved forward in some exciting ways in just the last couple of months. There's a new group of presidents, former presidents, Ernesto Zedillo of Mexico, very conservative leader, Fernando Henrique Cardoso of Brazil, Cesar Javier of Colombia have actually called for a decriminalization of marijuana. Now, this is absolutely unthinkable in the past that these conservative leaders would make such a proposal, and yet they are. So the conversation about rethinking drug policy has actually moved forward from a very unlikely place. It's not coming from the movement on the left in Latin America. It's coming from former very conservative leaders in Latin America. And that's a conversation that I think that the world and the United States needs to begin to have.
We're going to pick up on that. And our guests will be remaining with us another 15 minutes as we come back from this break before we bring Gwen Ifill on the air and talk about her book. We're looking at our hemisphere and President Barack Obama and American policies that were all in the news over the weekend. And we'll be taking your calls about that. Pam, if you want to hold on, we're going to come right back to your call about Hugo Chavez and Obama as soon as we return from this. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We continue and conclude our conversation about our hemisphere, President Barack Obama, American policy, his greetings in both Mexico and Trinidad and Tobago. We're joined in studio by Dr. Ron Pinio, who is coordinator of Latin American Studies at Towson University, author of two books and several articles in the history of Latin America, lived in Mexico for several years. Dr. Christiana Leahy is professor of comparative politics and chair of the Department of Political Studies and International Studies at McDaniel College. She's a member of the board of directors of Amnesty International, has traveled to Cuba in 1994 with her students from McDaniel College. William Kern is editor and founder of worldmeets.us. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Pam in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Pam.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks. I was kind of curious that you were talking about the summit. I read an article today about how the Republicans or whoever else it may have been was upset because President Obama shook hands and smiled at the Venezuelan president.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to figure out what was the harm in that. Maybe it's something I'm missing here, but I thought that we were trying to have a better diplomacy, foreign policy. And we want to, have a talk with the Venezuelan president and whoever else, our enemy. We want them coming to the fold. I couldn't understand this. I was
right.
Wondering maybe you could, and your guests, could give me a rundown on that, and I'll get off the phone and hear from you.
All right. Thanks, Pam. We talked a bit about this earlier in the hour, but let's do it again, Christiana. I mean, it was interesting. This happened to President Barack Obama when he, a few weeks ago, when he bowed slightly towards the King of Saudi Arabia, when he took his hand, saying this was because in Muslim countries you show deference to older leaders and elders, and that's what he was doing. And, you know,
And Asian countries.
And so what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I will say I went to the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown. So diplomacy, as I learned it, was you talk to your enemies. That's why you have diplomacy. Obama said it fairly eloquently when he said reaching out to our enemies strengthens our hand. So I do think part of that is this ridiculous polarization that has been going on for far too long in American politics that gets a lot of weight when it really doesn't have great significance other than in the Fox News channel networks and media.
I think that some people are remembering the context of sore relations between Venezuela and the United States and Ecuador and the United States. After all, when Chavez went to the UN in 2006, he said of President George W. Bush, who had been there the day before, "The devil has been here. It smells like sulfur."
Yes.
And then Rafael Correa of Ecuador actually challenged that characterization, and he said, "It's unfair to compare Bush to the devil," he said, "because the devil is intelligent," Correa said, "and Bush is dim-witted." So that's the overall context. But it seems to me, when I recall when Reagan dove into that handshake with Gorbachev, that was seen as enlightened statesmanship. But when Barack Obama extends his hand to erstwhile enemies, he's seen as callow and irresponsible. So I think it's partisan-driven. I totally agree, Christiana.
So I wonder if you could just kind of think for a moment, since all of you are, I mean, you follow the press very deeply, William Kern, around the globe and in Latin America, and Christiana and Ron, this is your world. Where do you think American policy goes from here? What are the things that you two think, then we'll go to William Kern, are what we have to look for in the coming months when it comes to our policies towards Latin America and the Caribbean? Because we haven't talked much about the Caribbean, and there's all tons of issues in the Caribbean. People, a lot of immigration, both undocumented and documented, come from the Caribbean as well. Haiti is a huge issue, and as Dominican Republic and the new president there. I mean, there's a lot of other things going on here that we haven't even touched. So talk a bit about what you think we have to look for and what the issues are going to be. Ron, we'll start Ron and go to Christiana.
Well, I'd like to see some confidence-building steps, some baby steps, some things that are doable. Cuba is seeking the release of 5 Cuban agents who were convicted in 2001.
They're being
Miami,
held, right.
And
yes,
down in Miami. They claim that they were simply keeping an eye on U.S.-based anti-Castro terrorists in Miami. So I think that Cuba's asking for the release of those people so they could come home to Cuba.
And I can see that happening.
Actually, I do, too. That'd be something, that I think is doable, that's smart, small scale, and then maybe we can begin to work up to more complex things. Also, there's the case of Luis Posada Carriles,
right,
who was this Cuban-born Venezuelan implicated in the 1976 bombing of the Cubana Airlines flight from Barbados to Jamaica. And 73 people died, including Cubans, Guyanese, and North Koreans. He's actually painting seascapes in Miami. He's a free man. He was recently charged with some other crimes, too. But As last time I checked, he was free and selling his seascapes. I think that the United States should send him back to Cuba to face, or to actually Venezuela is calling for his extradition. And I think that'd be a smart move, a small move, a smart move.
I would agree that some small steps would be significant. But another interesting thing that has arisen since the conference, and that, again, Obama mentioned in the press conference after the end of the summit, was someone actually asked him, is there such a thing as an Obama doctrine? And he ventured less than 100 days into office an answer to that doctrine. And he said, well, I could outline it right now as, one, that the United States is the most powerful nation on earth. Of course, that's a bit of, you know, bluster. And we're going to keep it that way. In other words, that's part of his goal. But he says we're only one nation, and we need to work with other nations. So in there is this, again, sort of centrist overture to, we will talk to our enemies, we'll talk to whomever, we will reach out that hand if you unclench your fist, I think was his wording. And then he also said something very interesting, his other pillar, if you will, of this Obama doctrine. He said, when we're at our best, we represent a set of universal values and ideas. And this is the part that I found really brave. He said, when we practice what we preach, and sometimes even confess when we go astray, then we are more powerful. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that that particular recognition of confession is in there when parallel to the summit was, in fact, the release of the CIA documents on the torture scandals. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a single person from the Latin American press, from the Latin American diplomatic corps, who that was missed.
We have about a minute before we have to go to break and let you guys go. 30 seconds, I'm being told, right there across the glass. And I think that would be interesting. I think the economic policies are going to be the ones that we really have to watch out for in Latin America, how that's going to change.
Happen, Mark? I think there's going to be a jockeying for position now. There's a kind of a rivalry between Brazil and Colombia. Colombia had a very close relationship with the United States under Bush. Now they're feeling slighted. Brazil is kind of on the upswing now with relations with President Obama. And then you've got Hugo Chavez in the mix there, and Correa, and a bunch of others, and Ortega as well.
William, I'm sorry, we do have to take, we have to roll out here. We're going to have you back again. William Curran, it's been a pleasure always to have you. Thank you so much for the work you do and giving us all this wonderful news from around the world, worldmeets.us. Check that out. Dr. Christiana Leahy and Ron Pinio, thank you both so much for being here. It's been great to have you all in the studio. It's been a really good conversation. Look forward to having you all back. It's good. Thank you so much.
Perfect.
Folks, privilege to have you all on. Don't go away, folks. We'll come right back from this brief break and got some business to talk to you about. Stay with us. Thank you.